So tonight we're going to be learning about Ruth, and we're coming up on Shavuos in a few weeks. And for me and for maybe some of us here, this feels like the end of a journey. Although I'm sure the journey will continue because last summer I gave a shiur about Chesed at the Nili Yarchei Kala. And after that, we went into a three-part series about Chesed, and then we did a five-part Vod about Chesed, and then we started these pre-holiday shiurim with the theme of Chesed weaving through. And I can't believe it's been quite a journey learning about Chesed together. So for those of you who have been a part of the journey, and for those of you who are just popping in tonight for the first time, it's very exciting. I feel like what we're going to talk about with Ruth tonight is really bringing together a lot of kind of the fundamentals of Chesed that we've talked about throughout the year. And this is very timely because on Shavuot we read Megillat Ruth, and it's meant to be a teaching of Chesed, right? The Megillah is meant to really be a story about Chesed and the rewards of Chesed. And we'll talk a little bit tonight about why that's relevant for Shavuot specifically. Share this one. Okay, so what I just referenced, this idea that Megillat Rut is all about Chesed, that comes from the Medrash Rabbah, in source number one. And I find it really interesting because when I first started doing a deep dive into Megillat Rut, I thought, what a random story. It really seems like a random story about one person's journey, or maybe you could view it as one family's journey, but it doesn't, at first glance, at least to me, it didn't seem to have a lot of universal application. But then when you start to go deeper into what's really going on in this story, I think it has a lot of universal application. And Chazal are telling us that here. I mean, what more universal message can there be than chesed, giving, loving kindness, right? Who is that not relevant to? So I want to take a look at Megillat Rut tonight through the lens of Chesed. What can we learn about Chesed, and what can we learn specifically from Rut as a role model of Chesed throughout the story? So we'll start from the beginning, Pasuk Aleph, and the Megillah begins, "Vayhi bimei shefot hashoftim." It was in the days when the judges judged. "Vayhi ra'av ba'aretz," and there was a famine in the land. "Vayelech ish mi beit lechem Yehuda," and a man went, right now he's anonymous, he doesn't have a name. He came from Beit Lechem in the portion of Yehuda in Israel, lagur b'sdei Moab. And he goes to live in the fields of Moab, the neighboring country. Hu v'ishto u'shnei banav. He and his wife and his two sons. Okay, so there's a lot going on here. I want to just kind of unpack phrase by phrase a little bit. What is happening at the beginning of Megillat Rut? How is the Megillah kind of setting a backdrop for us of what this story is going to be about? So the first words are, "Vayhi bimei shefot hashoftim." What do we know about this period of the judges, when the judges judge, right? This is before we have kings of Israel. This is after the Jewish people have, entered the land of Israel and they've settled. And there are these judges leading them. But if you look at this pasuk from Shoftim, which describes the period of the judges, in Shoftim it tells us, "Bayamim hahem ein melech b'Yisrael." In those days there was no king. "Ish hayashar beinav yaseh." Every person did what they felt was right. It was a society of self-centered, individualistic people. Everybody was, "What you're doing is not good enough for me. I'm going to do what I see fit." And in fact, Chazal tells us about this phrase, "Shefot hashoftim," which seems redundant, right? Why does it have to say, "In the days that the judges judged"? Why can't it just say, "The days of the judges," right? We know that the judges judged, right? But Chazal say, "Shefot hashoftim" means the judges were judged, because everybody was very skeptical of the judges, was very cynical about them. The people were judging their leaders. And that tells us a lot about the time period. There's no unity. There's no respect for one another. There's no kind of central vision that's bringing everybody together. Everybody's just doing their own thing, whatever they see fit, and everybody thinks they know better than the next person. So that is where our story begins, right? That's the kind of the historical backdrop that we're living. We're having this story in the times of the Shoftim, when everybody is just looking out for their own self-interest. Vayirav ba'aretz, and there's a famine in the land. Okay, we're very familiar with famines, right? Avram encountered a famine. Yitzhak encountered a famine. Yaakov encountered a famine. Yosef encountered a famine, right? What do people always do when there's a famine? They go to Egypt. That is the traditional path, right? They go to Egypt to get food, and then they come back. This person, this anonymous person in Pasuk Aleph, is making a different choice. There's a famine in the land, and he decides, I'm not going to go to Egypt. I'm going to go to Moab. Now, first of all, it's unlikely that the famine situation was really different in Moab. As we see later on, when Naomi and Russ are going to come back, they do that journey. It seems like they do that journey in one night. So they're very close geographically. They're moving to a very close location to where they came from. It's unlikely that the famine situation is going to be so much better in Moab. It would be probably a better move for them to go to Mitzrayim. And even if the famine situation was better in Moab, this seems like a real calculated move, right? Moab has a whole personality. Moab has a whole history to it. So I want to look at that in a moment. But first of all, let's just talk about who is this person. We're going to meet him in Pasuk Bet, Elimelech. And how does Chazal look at his leaving Israel in the first place? Chazal sees this in a very negative light. There are some extenuating circumstances where people do have kind of permission to leave Israel for certain cases, as it talks about here in the Mishnah Torah and the Rambam. But a person of Elimelech's financial status, Elimelech was known to be a very wealthy man. He would have been, Chazal tell us, he would have been okay. He could have survived the famine and had plenty to live on in Israel. Why is he leaving? Because he doesn't want everybody else knocking at his door. He doesn't want everybody else leaning on him for support. And the people really could have used him. He was a leader. He was seen as a righteous person. He was a pillar of the nation at this time. And he abandons them, not only abandoning them financially, but abandoning them, you know, in their need for moral support. So not only did he not need to leave, but he really shouldn't have left. And the Rambam says, even in these situations where maybe it would be okay, it would be justified to leave Israel, like in the case of a famine, afal pishe mutar, even though it might be permissible in certain situations, let's say, ein amidat chasidut. But that's not the path of a person. It wouldn't be altruistic, this Safaria's translation. That's not somebody who goes above and beyond, who really cares for other people, who really wants to do the shorish of chasidut, right? It's chesed, who really wants to do chesed. This is not the path of a giver, to abandon their people in such a difficult time. Shari machlon v'kilyon, right? These are two characters that we're going to meet in the next pasuk. Shnei gdolei hador hayu. They were the leaders of the generation. Mipnei tzar gdolei yatzu. And they left during this time of crisis. Minitchayvu klaya lamakom. And because of that, they were punished, as we're going to see. So the very fact that they left is already seen as a really negative thing. And Chazal see it as a specific shirking of their responsibility to the rest of the nation, as a specific shirking of the yoke of chesed that could have been upon them, or the opportunity of chesed that could have been upon them. The fact that they go to Moab is also really saying something. Moab, the nation, comes from Moab, the person. Moab, the person, came from an illicit relationship between Lot and his daughter. So just to bring us back, what was the story with Lot? Okay, Lot is Avraham's nephew, and Avraham kind of takes him under his wing. Lot's father, Haran, Avraham's brother, dies, and Avraham kind of adopts Lot as sort of a son, and they travel together, and at a certain point, their shepherds are fighting, and it seems like they both need a little bit of space, and Avraham says, you know what, why don't we each take our own land? Okay, so what does Lot do? Vayisa Lot et einav, beyaret kol kikar hayardin, ki chulam mashke. Lot looks around and he says, ah, look at this land. This whole plain of the Jordan it's all beautiful. It's all like, you know, well irrigated. Lifnei shachir Hashem et Sodom ve'et Amora. Here's a little bit of foreshadowing. This is before Hashem destroys Sodom and Amora. Kigan Hashem ke'eretz Mitzrayim. It was like Hashem's garden. It was like Egypt. Bo achat soar. Vivchar lo lot at kol kikar hayardin. And Lot chooses, I want to live in the place that is materialistically, that is physically, that is externally, superficially beautiful. And Lot separates from Abraham and he chooses this path. He chooses to live in Sodom. We know Sodom is going to be destroyed shortly thereafter because the people of Sodom are just awful people. They're people who are morally opposed to chesed. They would kill, they would punish in terrible ways anybody who did chesed, anybody who did kindness for another person, anybody who opened their door to a stranger. They didn't even want tourists coming through because they felt, and we'll look at the Mishnah on Avot here, what is the Midah of Sodom? Shali, shali, v'shalcha, shalach. What's mine is mine, and what's yours is yours. Right? And the Mishnah in Avot originally says, Zo midah benoni. This is like the middle path, right? The real Baal Chesed, the real altruistic person will say, what's mine is yours and what's yours is yours, right? I respect your things, but I also share my things with you, right? And then somebody who's really cruel is going to say, what's yours is mine and what's yours is mine and what's mine is mine, right? That would be like a really selfish mindset. Somewhere in the middle, the Mishnah says, is somebody who says, I keep what I have, you keep what you have. But then there's this second opinion in the Mishnah that says, no, that's not the middle path. That's Midas Sodom. That's the characteristic of this nation that was destroyed because that was their philosophy on life. Now, what's so bad about that? What's mine is mine and what's yours is yours. Sodom really believed that the moral thing to do is to not help another person. Why is that the moral thing to do? Well, it's kind of like an extreme social Darwinism type of philosophy, right? If I would help you, then you're not learning to, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You're not learning to do things for yourself and you're just going to feel indebted to me and you're going to lose your dignity. The best thing that I can do for you is to tell you no. You need something, you go figure it out, right? And either you'll figure it out and great, now I've given you that gift of independence, or you won't figure it out and then, sorry, you know, maybe we don't need you in our society anyway. This was a very extreme kind of, a total anti-chesed mindset. And Lot chooses to live in this place just because it's physically beautiful. So he's very lured to the materialistic aspect of things. And different opinions about Lot, you know, maybe he thought he's going to bring the mindset of Avram. He's going to influence them for good. Or maybe he just thought he wouldn't be influenced, whatever it is. But we see later on, Lot ends up a very confused and conflicted and kind of sick person who's kind of sort of trying to practice what Avraham has taught him about chesed, but at the same time, like really it's become totally corrupted. So that's Lot, right? And that's where Moab comes from. Let's just look at the psukim of Moab's birth. So we have Lot, he settles in Sodom, right? He chooses this place, even though they're so anti everything that Lot was raised with, everything that Lot was trained with by Avraham, this whole mindset of chesed. And then eventually Sodom is destroyed, right? And we know that Lot is able to escape with his two daughters. His wife dies. And after they all escape, Lot's two daughters kind of despair. And they think that they're the only two people, they think that they're the only family left in the world. And they say, we need to populate the world. What are we going to do? So Vatomer HaBechira Al Atzira, the older daughter says to the younger daughter, Avinu Zakein, our father's old. And there's really nobody else who can, you know, have relations with us to have more children, to populate the land. Why don't we give our father wine? And we'll sleep with him. And we'll have children with our father. And that's what they do. So they both sleep with their father one night after another. First the older one, then the younger one. They get a little drunk. They sleep with him, and they have these two children. And the first one is named Moav. Hu Avi Moav Ad Hayom. He is the father. Moav, the person. Moav, the man, is the father of Moav, the nation. So Moav is born from the ashes of Sodom. He's born with this very confusing, you know, parentage of sort of chesed, but like totally corrupted and warped and skewed by materialism. And Moab, the nation, becomes a nation that Hashem tells us we're not allowed to accept converts from Moab. Why? Because when the Jewish people had just left being slaves in Egypt and were traveling through the desert, right, and had nothing, and were traveling through foreign lands, just briefly, and ask nation after nation, please, can we travel through your land? We won't take anything. We'll pay you for your things. You know, we really won't bother you. Moab was so callous to Bnei Israel. And the Torah tells us, Al davar asher lo kinu etchem b'lechem u'b'mayim. They wouldn't even offer you water. They wouldn't even offer you bread, even the basics. And Hashem says, such a nation that's so counter to the mindset of chesed has no place among the Jewish people. Now we know later on, this is part of the story of Ruth, that Chazal learned that it's really only the men, it's not the women, right? Ruth is from Moab, she is accepted as a convert. It all works out, but we're coming into this backdrop, into this scene already in Pasuk Aleph of like everything stacks against Chesed, right? The Chazal tells us this Megillah is going to be about Chesed, and how does it start out? A time period of people who are anti-chesed, a man who is anti-chesed, traveling to a country that is totally anti-chesed with this whole rich history of moral opposition to chesed, right? So already we have so many cards stacked against chesed, and this is the backdrop with which the story begins. So one of the things that I want to look at as we go through the Megillah is we're going to see Ruth as a real role model of chesed, a real champion of chesed. How is she going to navigate these barriers? How is she going to navigate this generation of selfishness and disunity, this family that she comes into that's shirking the responsibilities to help others in a land that is historically morally opposed to chesed? So that's challenge number one, right? Just coming into a situation that's so challenging already to the mission of chesed. Okay. Pasuk bet, b'shem ha'ish Elimelech. Back to the Megillah. The man's name, spoiler alert, his name was Elimelech. B'shem ishto Naami, and his wife's name was Naami. B'shem shnei vanav, Machlon v'chilion Ephratim. And their two sons were named Machlon and Kilion. They were from Ephrat. Beit Lachim v'huda v'yavos demo v'yusham. And they came, the Pasuk is telling us once again, they came to the fields of Moab, Ve'yushan, and they were there. Now, right now, we don't know what's going to happen. Maybe they're going to be there for a short time. Maybe they're going to be there for a long time. Maybe they're just going to come and get a little bit of food and go back, right? We have different models throughout the Torah of how long people left for, how settled they became in the foreign land. Okay, maybe it won't be so bad. Maybe they'll just get some food and come back. What happens? Vayamat Elimelech ish Naami, and Elimelech, the husband of Naami, dies. V'tisha'er hi u'shnei vanaha. So if we originally thought, okay, Elimelech's a bad guy, right? He really should have stepped up and been the leader. But what can they do? The wife and the sons, they were dragged along, right? Well, now we see, seems like they weren't just dragged along, because after he dies, they stay. So it seems like they're really identifying with Moab here, right? And they're really not rushing to go back. Okay, what's the next move? Vayesu lahem nashim. They get married. The two sons get married. Now again, we have a historical precedent for you know, what happens when somebody dies prematurely. We think about how to continue their legacy, right? So the boys get married, right? It makes a lot of sense. It's a time that they might, you know, their father's funeral during the Shiva. They kind of reflect what's important in life. I want to focus on family. I want to continue my father's legacy. I'm going to get married. Who do they pick to marry? Nashim Moaviot. They marry Moabite women. Now, this, again, is a little bit confusing. Presumably, these Moabite women went through some kind of conversion, but it's a little bit questionable. I mean, we see later on, Orpah's going to just like throw everything out the window. So whether she was really altruistic in her conversion is a little bit questionable. It seems like Mahlon and Kilion are making a statement here, kind of like Elimelech made a statement of, I'm not going to go to Mitzrayim. I'm going to go to Moab, right? We're not going to go back to Israel and look for wives. We're not even going to wait until things are better and go back and marry Jewish women. We are Moabites. We're marrying Moabite women, right? And it's unclear here whether their children even are going to be Jewish. Shem ha'achad Orpah, one of the women that they marry is named Orpah, v'shem ha'shini Rut, the second one is Rut, v'yishvu sham ke'eser shanim. So lest we thought this was a short-term plan, they lived there for 10 years. They're not rushing to go back and help their brethren that they left behind. V'yimutu gam shneihem. And then Mahlon and Kilion also die. Mahlon v'Kilion, v'tishayir ha'isha mishnei yaladah u'meisha. And the wife is left behind from her two sons and from her husband who passed. Okay, so, and Chazal tell us this is all, you know, Elimelech died as a punishment for his behavior, and Mahlon and Kilion die as a punishment for their behavior. They had a lot of chances. They had 10 years. They could have changed, but they were just doing, you know, pursuing their own self-interest and not interested in chesed at all. Okay, so now we have Naomi, right? And she's lost her husband and she's lost her two sons. What's she going to do? Batakam hi v'chaloteha. She and her daughters-in-law, they get up, right? They're not going to wallow in self-pity. They have to figure out how to move on. Batashav mistei Moav. And they return from the fields of Moav. Notice this is all, even though she is doing it with her daughters-in-law, but everything is written in singular, right? Batakam, batashav, kishama. So it's really Naomi's doing this, and then her daughters-in-law are like tagging along, okay? And she returns from the fields of Moab. Ki shama b'stei Moab, ki pakan Hashem esamo l'aseis lahem l'acham. She heard that Hashem had remembered the Jewish people and was now, they had bread now, they had food. Things were going better in Israel, right? So she hears this, and she decides she's going to go back. And her daughters-in-law are with her, but they're kind of just along for the ride. But Tetzi min hamakom asher haita shama, again, written in singular. She goes out from the place that she was there. Chazal points out there's a parallel here. But Tetzi min hamakom is similar to the words about Yetze Yaakov. When Yaakov leaves Be'er Sheva, the Torah specifically tells us he left Be'er Sheva, even though we already know that he left Be'er Sheva to go to Haran. So it seems repetitive. It seems unnecessary to tell us that. So Chazal learned from that. No, what the Torah is adding by saying by Yetze Yaakov is that his leaving really made an impression, that he was like the life of the city. He was, you know, he was what kept people going every single day. And when he left, they really felt like they were missing something, right? When Naomi leaves, she's been in Moab now for more than 10 years. Her leaving really makes an impression. She's a charismatic person. She's a person who touches other people, right? So she leaves and her leaving makes an impression. Ushnei chalotayima, again, her daughters-in-law are there, but they're kind of like there for the ride, right? We're not hearing much from them right now. But teilachna b'derach lashuv al eretz Yehuda. And again, here we have a hint that it's really Naomi who's doing everything and her daughters-in-law are just along for the ride, because it says in plural, they all went to return to Yehuda. But of course, Orpah and Rus are not returning to Yehuda because they never lived in Yehuda, right? So it's clear that this is really Naomi and they're feeling a part of it with her. Okay, but Tomer Naomi Lishnei Chalota, Leichna, Shovna. Naomi says to her two daughters-in-law, go, return. Yishalavet Yima, go return to your mother's houses. Rut and Orpah, Chazal tell us, were princesses. They were royalty in Moab. What are they doing with Naomi? She's a widow. She's going back to Israel. Like they're losing everything. No, go back to your mothers. Go back to your happy childhood homes. Go back to your lives of richness. Yas Hashem imachem chesed kasher hasitem im hametim v'imadi. This is the first time we see the word chesed coming in here. Hashem should do chesed with you, Nami says, just like you did with me, and just like you did with those who died. Chazal tell us there are two main chesedim that Naomi is referring to here. What's the kindness that Rus and Orpah did with Naomi and with Mahlon and Kilion and Elimelech? The two kindnesses, Chazal say, are number one, that they paid for the expenses of the funeral, and number two, that they chose to forego the money that was due to them in the ksuba contract when they got married, right? There was certain money that was due to them in case of death, and they chose to forego that money and allow Naomi to have it. So there's a chesed being alluded to here. Somehow, even in this selfish time period, in this selfish country, in the midst of selfish family members, somehow Rus and Orpah became people of chesed, right? And Naomi alludes to that here, and she says, I hope Hashem shows you chesed, like the chesed that you did to me. Yitin Hashem lachem u'matzana menucha. I hope Hashem should give to you, and you should find peace. Isha beit isha. You should find husbands. Batishak lahen, batisena kolan batifkena. And she kissed them, and they all lifted their voices, and they all cried. This is very emotional, right? We imagine them kind of like literally at a fork in the road. Naomi's there. She says, look, I really appreciate everything that you've done for me, but you have no future with me. Go back. And there's a big conflict here. What are they going to choose to do? And the both the daughters-in-law say, no, we're going to go to you. We're going to stay with you. We're going to return to your nation. But tell me, Naomi, Shovna benotai. She says, no, go, my daughters. Notice that she calls them my daughters, not my daughters-in-law. They're obviously very close. Lama teilach naimi. Why should you go with me? Ha'odli banim b'me'ai? Do I still have, you think I'm expecting? You think I still have children within me? That you lachem la'anashim, and I have somebody that you're going to be able to marry? You're young, you're marriageable. You should go have a future. I have nobody for you. Shovna benotai. Lechna ki zakanti miut leish. You should go back. I'm old already. I'm not going to have another husband. Ki amarti yesh li tikva. Gam hayiti alayla leish. Gam yaladati banim. Let's say theoretically, I got married tonight and I was able to have children. Halahen tisaberna ad asher yigdalu. What are you going to do? Wait until these children grow up? Halahen teagena levitayot leish. You're going to save yourselves and you're not going to get married to anybody else. Al benotai, please don't, my daughters. Ki marli ma'od mikem. It's too hard for me. Ki atzabi yad Hashem. The hand of the Lord has struck out against me. This is a really bizarre thing that Naomi's saying, right? There's a lot of arguments that she could make. But she goes on this whole speech about, you think I'm going to have more children? Why would I have more children? If I did have more children, would you wait for them? Would you wait for them to grow up? It doesn't make any sense. Why is she bringing that up here? Because it's obvious as we proceed through the Megillah that the concept of yibum, the concept of levirate marriage, the concept of somebody dies prematurely and we want to continue their name by marrying somebody within the same family, is really on the forefront of a lot of people's minds. And this is obviously on the forefront of Rus and Orpah's minds. Otherwise, why is Naomi bringing this up? Like, what do you think? I have a husband for you? And then she goes on and on and on about it. Why would they think that? She's an old woman, right? It makes sense. It wouldn't be on their minds. But it obviously is on their minds. And we see that this is something that's very important to Rus later on. So Naomi's saying there is no future. Even if you want to preserve the names of your husbands, I have nobody else for you. So it's really a point where she's trying to convince them to go back. So I just want to point out two more challenges that are coming up to Chesed here. And so far, we haven't heard very much from Rus and Orpah. We see that they did some Chesed and we see that they're sticking to Naomi, but there's still, it seems like Naomi's really, she's the charisma, she's the presence in Moab, she's the one who's making all the decisions, and they're kind of tagging along for the ride. And this is the point where they have to really decide who are they and who are they going to become. So we have two more challenges to Chesed here. First of all, notice that they physically have nothing to give. This doesn't seem like a story that's moving in the direction of chesed, what do they even have? They've lost everything in Moab. They're going back penniless, as you know, just with the shirts on their backs, just to go be with the Jewish people. They're going to have to be the recipients of chesed. So we're not expecting them really at this point to rise and be chesed role models. Secondly, we have this kind of glaring identity crisis that's happening here, where on the one hand, all they have right now is each other. Although Naomi's telling them, you could go back and be with your, you know, birth families, and you do have more. You could go back to the place where you came from. But right now they're choosing to cling to Naomi. And in a sense, that is providing something, right? That's providing a relationship. But in a sense, they're kind of losing themselves. Naomi is running the show. Naomi is the one who's doing all of the actions here. Everything is in singular tense. And then it says, oh, and her daughters-in-law. They have to really make a choice right now. If we cling to Naomi and we go back as foreigners into this land that we've never been to before, with a different language and a different culture, and right, and we have nothing, you know, physically we have nothing, we're just going to be Naomi's daughters-in-law. We're going to be totally dependent on her. Are we going to have any identity of our own? So they have to make this choice at this point. How are we going to navigate this conflict of independence versus interdependence? And how can I, is there a way that I can maintain this relationship that's valuable while at the same time maintaining my own identity? This is something that I find comes up with chesed a lot, that we kind of there could be this scary point of losing yourself in the context of chesed. Am I only what I am because of what this other person has given me? Or is it, as a giver of chesed, is this person becoming too dependent on me that it's like, you know, we're attached to the hip and it's like unhealthy, right? So how do we like maintain that distance of, I am my own person. I have my own thoughts and feelings and drives in life. But at the same time, we can still engage in this relationship that can be meaningful. Okay, so again, we have three challenges here so far to chesed. We have the challenge of the cards being stacked against chesed, many different ways of this anti-chesed mindset coming up that's kind of in the backdrop. Physically, they have nothing to give, and this navigating this challenge of independence versus interdependence. So I want to look at, in the next few psukim, how does Rus choose to navigate this, and how does Orpah choose to navigate these three challenges? Batisana kolena, batitkana od, they lifted their voices, they cried even more. Batishak Orpah lechamosa, v'rus davka ba. Orpah kisses her mother-in-law, sayonara, and Rus clings to her. Rus davka ba. Rus will not leave her side. Batomer, hine shava givimtecha lama ve'al alokeha. Alokeha. And Naomi says to Rus, hello, look what's happening. Your sister-in-law, they're actually sisters originally. She's going back to her nation and her God. Shuvi achare yivimteich, go after your sister-in-law. But Tomer Rus, al tifki'i bi lazvich. Don't hurt me, Rus says, to tell me to leave you. Lashuv me'achareich, to go away from you. Ki al asher telchi eleich, wherever you go, I will go. Vasher talini alin, wherever you sleep, I will sleep. Ameich ami, your nation is my nation. Elokai chalokai, your God is my God. This is her like pledge. This is her. This is seen as her conversion process. Chazal interpret, you know, Chazal go phrase by phrase to, you know, what aspect of Judaism she's accepting, which with each one of these phrases. But it's also a pledge of allegiance to Naomi. Wherever you go, I go. I'm your woman. I'm with you. I don't want to leave. Bashir tamus yamus, v'shama kaver, wherever you die, I'm going to die. And that's where I'll be buried. Chol yasa Hashem li b'chol yosif. That's the language of a promise. Ki amaves yafrid b'ni u'v'neich. Only death is going to separate us. This is like her. This would be a very romantic, like if you're going to write your own vows at your wedding, this would be a beautiful, it's a little reminiscent of the secular wedding vows here. And Naomi sees here Ruth is being really stubborn about this. She's not going to change her mind. And she stops. She stops bringing up the question. She stops challenging her. Just in these few psukim, Ruth has so beautifully managed to navigate these three huge barriers to chesed, these three huge challenges, right? Number one, she says, I don't care that I came from Sodom, that I came from Moab. I don't care that we're living in this period where everybody's just looking out for themselves and everybody's so obsessed with their own identity and their own agenda and their own, resume and accomplishments in life. I believe in chesed. And this is something that I think is incredibly brave. And I think is an example to all of us, right? We all encounter sometimes people telling, this mindset of anti-chesed, even though, thank God, we live in a society that, does value kindness and does value giving. But then there are all these conflicting values of, promote yourself and put yourself ahead and speak your mind and don't let anybody manipulate you and don't be a doormat, right? And Russ is saying, I don't care that other people might think I'm crazy. I believe in chesed. And I'm going to stand up to all of us, all of that kind of baggage that's in my past and say, no, I'm a person of chesed. Secondly, we looked at her as somebody who had nothing to give, but think about what this speech, what just her words mean to Naomi, right? When a person might have nothing to give, I think it was very beautifully said. I'll go back in a minute. But I saw this to our Torah, and then my mother-in-law also shared it at the Seder on Pesach by Rabbi Shimon Apizdorf about the word karpas, right? We dip karpas in salt water at the Seder. So what does the karpas represent? So Rabbi Apizdorf says, think about the letters of karpas. Each letter, the name of each letter is actually the name of a word. Is an entire word. So if you kind of look at the four letters of karpas, each is their own word forming a sentence. It's telling us what karpas symbolizes. So the first letter of karpas is kaf, which means like kaf, means the palm of the hand. The second letter resh means a poor person. So kaf, resh. When taken together, these two letters or words speak of a benevolent hand open for the needy. But what if you're a person of limited means with precious little to give? Look at the second half of the word karpas. The letter peh means mouth. The final letter samech, lismoch, means to support. True, you may not be capable of giving in the material sense, but you can always give with your words, words of kindness and concern, words of empathy and understanding, words I think it's lift, an impoverished soul, and provide a means of support when nothing else will do. So we have to remember with chesed that there's never a point where we have nothing to give, because we can always take the message of karpas, right? We can always give with our words. We can always give moral support to another person. That ultimately, that's what God wanted Elimelech and Mahlon and Kilion to do. And that's the responsibility that they shirked. And Ruth says, I can always do that. I'm always going to be a person of chesed. And I can just think of how she must have uplifted Naomi with this speech of, don't worry, you're not alone. I'm with you. And I'm going to stick with you no matter what, till death do us part, right? So she's not willing to accept that she has nothing to give. She's always going to give whatever she has. She's giving, really, what she's giving is a relationship, which we'll come back to soon. And finally, this question of independence versus interdependence. She's able to strike this balance of, I'm with you and I'm going to stick with you and we're going to have this relationship and we're going to have the rest of our lives together are going to be intertwined. We're going to be attached to the hip. And at the same time, it's no longer Naomi is doing X, Y, Z. Oh, and her daughters-in-law. I now have a voice. I now have something to say. I'm going to stand up to you. I'm going to argue with you. And Chazal say that when Ruth said, "Al tifki'i bilazveich lashum acharayich," please don't tell me to leave you. Mahu al tifki'i bi amrala mikol makom da'ati l'yiskayer. I want you to know, Ruth says to Naomi, I'm planning on converting come what may. Okay, it doesn't matter. I don't need you to help me to convert. I would really prefer to do it through you. I prefer to continue like my Jewish, you know, education and identity through you. But just so you know, I plan to do this no matter what. So if you think that you're going to try to push me away from Judaism with what you're saying, know that I'm going to pursue this no matter what, right? So Rus is very much her own person with her own opinions, and her own personality. But at the same time, she's able to combine that with a real relationship. And I think ultimately what we learn about Chesed from Rus is how to pursue chesed in the context of a relationship. There is no better way to do chesed than to build a relationship. Let's look at this excerpt from Dr. Yael Ziegler. Rus is a devuka, right? The pasuk told us, Rus davkaba, right? Rus clung to her. What does it mean to be a devuka, to cling? A woman who knows how to fasten herself to another person. What does it mean to be a devuka? The act of cleaving to another is the very opposite of selfishness. Individualistic behavior entails looking out for oneself, regarding one's own interest as paramount, even when it undermines the needs of the other. This attitude prevails during the period of the judges, like we talked about, in which tribalism and individualism eclipse any possibility of national unity. Ruth's unprecedented act of attaching herself to another is an important step in beginning the renovation of society so sorely needed at this juncture. Davak connotes an all-encompassing connection, a relationship characterized by identification in which one party embraces the totality of the other totally and completely. This description accurately describes Ruth's unusual relationship with Naomi, in which her decision to remain with her mother-in-law undermines her own self-interest. Rus shows us that chesed is not about I give you and you take, right? Or you give me and I receive. When it becomes like that, it becomes very mathematical. It can lead to a lot of resentment. Is it equal? Have I given you as much as you've given me? Am I getting as much out of this as you're getting out of this? It can lead to a lot of resentment from the part of the giver, but also resentment from the part of the receiver, right? And some people interpret Lot's whole kind of messed up mentality as a result of that, like he didn't know how to process all of Avram's chesed all the time. It just made him feel uncomfortable, like he was always the receiver, right? He felt like he had no dignity in the context of that relationship. Rus is showing us the way to do chesed is not to think about it as chesed, but to think about it as a relationship. I love you and I care about you and I want to be with you. I'm not thinking about it as like, how much of, like, what am I getting out of it and what are you getting out of it? I'm just thinking about this as valuable within itself. And we see that continue throughout the story of Megillah. So she's always looking for a relationship. I love this quote from Brené Brown. I've been reading her book recently. This is actually from The Gifts of Imperfection, she quotes herself in Daring Greatly, which I'm reading now. And she says, until we can receive with an open heart, we're never really giving with an open heart. When we attach judgment to receiving help, we knowingly or unknowingly attach judgment to giving help. I think it's important for us to reflect as individuals and as a society, like how much of the stone mindset exists within us. How much are we also thinking like, if I can't do it myself, it's not worth doing, right? If I can't do it myself, like I'm worthless. If I have to receive it from somebody else, right? Or judging other people who are knocking at our door, who are leaning on us for help. Like, what's wrong with you? Can't pull yourself up by your own bootstraps and do it? But how would we view that differently if we're thinking about it like Rus does, just as a relationship? I love you and I care about you. So of course I want to help you, right? Do I think about that with my kids? Like, what have you done for me today? You know, well, occasionally maybe I do, right? But in a context of a loving relationship like that, we're not keeping score. We just want to do and want to help and feel like we're getting richer from it because it's in the context of a relationship. You know, we're running a little bit short on time, but I think if you continue to bring that idea through as you look through Perek Beis and Perek Gimel of the Megillah, we have two more major episodes of Ruth's chesed. We see her, first of all, gathering grain to share with Naomi, right? She goes to the fields of Boaz, and that's a big part of the story, is how she's getting food to share with Naomi. That's one chesed. And then we see this other chesed of eventually she ends up marrying Boaz, who's a family member of Naomi and of Ruth's dead husband, Mahlon. And the whole purpose of that is to do a kind of form of yibum to preserve her husband's memory. And that's a chesed. That's what we call a chesed shel emes. That's the ultimate form of chesed, because when you do chesed for somebody who's passed away, you know that there's no chance of them reciprocating. So it's really an altruistic act. So we see this chesed, this specific brand of chesed continuing through those stories. I think if you look for it, you'll start to notice it, of her navigating that independence versus interdependence. She's very much, she knows what she wants. She's not afraid to ask for it. And at the same time, she's so intertwining her life with other people and not afraid of that, embracing every relationship, every chesed that she's looking at. It's not, I need food for myself and for Naomi, so let me go find a random field. She says, no, I want to find a field of somebody who I can be motzi chen bein of, somebody who's really going to take to me, somebody who I can form a relationship with. Everything is always about the relationship. That's, I think ultimately that's really her brand of chesed. I just want to briefly reference something else that I noticed as I was reading through the Megillah, is how many parallels there are between Ruth's story and Avraham's story. Right? If we think about it for a second, they both kind of reject the religion and the mindset that they were brought up with, and kind of, right, Avraham is called Avraham Ha'ivri because all the world was kind of one philosophy, and he was me'evar acher. He decided, no, I believe something different. And then he started this whole revolution of chesed, of kindness, of monotheism, right? And he kind of stands against everybody else. We see all of these things pulling Ruth in one direction morally, and she chooses, no, I want something different, right? That's how it all begins. We see also they're both identified as role models of chesed. We see that they, you know, Avraham faces famine, Ruth faces famine. Avraham has to leave his homeland, Ruth leaves her homeland to go to Israel, both going to the same place. Avraham is asked to sacrifice his son, Ruth is asked, you know, do you really want this life if it means you're not going to have any more children? And just many parallels throughout the story. But what's so beautiful to me is that Avraham faced 10 tests that were given to him by God. Ruth takes these 10 tests. No, nobody told her she had to do any of this, and she chooses this path. It's like she is the spiritual daughter of Avraham, taking all these messages and saying, I'm going to choose this. I'm going to choose this of my own. I'm going to say yes to this because this is what I believe, even if nobody else is telling me that this is what I need to do. Okay, before we wrap up, last time we met, we talked about Sfiros HaOmer, and we talked about this idea of the Sfiros, that we're working on different character traits throughout this period of Sfiros HaOmer to prepare to receive the Torah. I just couldn't help noticing as I was going through the Megillah, right? We have the Sfira of Chesed. The first week of Sfiros HaOmer was the week of Chesed, and every day of that week, the way that I described it in the last year, the way that I've been thinking about it, is like Chesed is bumping up against another Midah. And that other Midah, that other character trait, is kind of, you know, rubbing against it, challenging a little bit. What are you going to do if you have to throw this in along with your Chesed? And with that, the friction of those two Midahs rubbing against each other, it fine tunes our Chesed. It hones it. It sharpens it. So that by the end of the week of Chesed, we have this really sharp Chesed tool that we can use in all different ways in all different situations. I just couldn't help but notice as I'm going through the Megillah, these different aspects of chesed that are coming through all the different, I mean, I just made for myself a little chart here, and I'm happy to share this with anybody who wants. You already have this actually in the link that I shared. If you didn't get it, I'm happy to share it with you afterwards. But I feel like what's happening here is Rus is taking this model of chesed from Abraham, and she's now showing us, let's make it real. You know, let's talk about real challenges that come up with chesed. What happens when chesed bumps up against this mitzvah or that mitzvah or this conflict or that conflict, when challenges come our way, and Rus is taking those mitzvahs and rubbing them against each other and saying, we can make this work, right? And fine tuning that tool so that by the end of the Megillah, we see a living role model of somebody who really can apply chesed in every situation and navigate all of those challenges along the way. Okay, so we are coming up on Shavuos, and we're going to read this Megillah on Shavuos. What does this have to do with Shavuos, with receiving the Torah? I think Rus has a lot to tell us about how to be a vessel to receive the Torah. If we want to be ready to receive the Torah, we have to be ready to stand up against the popular mindset. We have to be ready to stand up for what's right, even if it's not what everybody else is doing. And Rus shows us how to do that. We have to be ready to engage in real relationships, right? Think about the Torah. We have three categories of mitzvot in the Torah: relationship between us and God, relationship between us and another person, relationship between us and ourselves. Everything, every single mitzvah boils down to a relationship. Rus shows us, put yourself into a relationship. Be willing to become vulnerable and embrace the flow of giving in both directions. It's okay. Chesed, I mean, look at Rus, how graciously she receives also throughout the Megillah, and how even the way that she receives, Boaz says, you did me a chesed, when Rus comes to ask him for a chesed, right? We have to embrace within the context of relationship that there's going to be a flow of giving in both directions, and it's not about keeping score. It's about putting ourselves into that relationship wholeheartedly. We have to be able to maintain our personal identity, our independence and dignity, while also striving toward interconnectedness, right? We know that we're only worthy to receive the Torah if we're united with the rest of the Jewish people. We have to be ready to be ourselves and be whole in who we are, while also being unified as a people. Ultimately, accepting the Torah means opening up ourselves to receiving richly, but also accepting the responsibility to give richly. It means taking the chesed legacy of Abraham, recognizing the power of boundless giving, and then being ready to hone that skill into a nuanced, thoughtful tool balanced with the other midos that the Torah preaches. Rus teaches us how to achieve all of these goals. I want to make a plug here. We have some out-of-towners on Zoom right now, but some of you are in town. And I want to make a plug here for the final step of our chesed journey that we've been traveling on this year. And thank you to those of you who have been a part of it along the way. In 2 weeks, on Wednesday night, May 25th, we're going to be meeting at 8 p.m. at the Wi-Fi Center, and we are going to have a chesed panel of four different chesed role models from our own community. They will all tell you they're not chesed role models, they're just regular people, but I will tell you they are my chesed role models, four of them. And they're going to be speaking to some of the questions that come up as we strive to be givers, as we're coming up into Shavuos and we're, you know, very much have chesed on our minds. They're going to talk about how to make chesed real in our own lives. They each are in different, representing different sub communities among us, and kind of embodying different ways of doing chesed. And I think it's going to be really inspiring for us to see how chesed could look in different ways and help us to apply chesed in our own lives. There's going to be a link sent out. If you're on the Neely mailing list, you'll get it. There's going to be a link sent out that you could submit questions in advance if you're interested. And I really encourage you to do so that we can try to make it as relevant as possible. And you're also welcome to email me your questions if you want, and I will be net or make sure that they're included. So I hope you all can make it in 2 weeks. And in the meantime, I'm wishing you all a wonderful rest of your night, a wonderful rest of your Shvi'as HaOmer, and a beautiful upcoming Shavuos of Chesed.